There actually is an apocalypse already happening in our world, one that most of us barely notice. The animals are dying. This underreported fact lies at the heart of novelist Lydia Millett's new book, How the Dead Dream. Here's an excerpt. Say an individual was the very last of its kind. Say it was small, one of the kangaroo rats, for instance, and ran from a young fox through a hardscrabble field, towering clouds casting long shadows over the grass. The run lasted a few seconds only. No one was watching, no one at all, because there was no one for miles around, no one but insects and worms and a jet passing high overhead. Say neither of them knew either, the fox or the rat, that the rat was the last, that no rat like him would ever be born again. Was it different then? Did the world feel the loss? Others were sure to fall afterward. A long fly with iridescent wings that lived only in the nest of this single rat, say. A parasite that lived under the wing of the fly. A flowering plant whose roots were nourished by the larval phase of the parasite. A bat that pollinated the plant. It was time that would show the loss. Only time that would show how the world had been stripped of its mysteries, stripped by the hundreds and thousands and millions. Remaining would be only the pigeons and the raccoons. It sounds like nonfiction, but How the Dead Dream is also a story of a young real estate developer whose life falls apart and who becomes obsessed by endangered animals. Millett told Steve Paulson that where she lives, she's acutely aware of how often we humans contribute to the death of wildlife, even unintentionally.
I live in the middle of a national park outside Tucson in the desert, and too many times I've hit an animal, even though I try to creep through the park as slowly as I can in my car. But I've hit various animals. I hit a ringtail once. That was one of the worst moments, really, of my life.
A ringtail deer?
No, a ringtail is a sort of, in the raccoon family, very beautiful animal. I wouldn't say it's rare, but you don't see them as often as coyotes by any means, and they're nocturnal. And I hit one once and just sort of watched it drag its body off the road. It dragged the insides of its body sort of after it off the road, and it was just one of the most painful things that has ever happened to me, actually.
It's interesting to hear that response. I mean, I think most people would certainly be saddened by an experience like that, hitting an animal on the road, but, you know, probably get past it not too much longer after that. You know, it certainly wasn't intentional, but it sounds like it's more than that to you.
Well, you do get past it. It's just one of those things that you can't stop your life for, or that is, we don't stop our lives for that kind of death, and that's partly what I write about in this novel, is that we don't stop our lives for much of anything like that. But I am actually particularly affected by people who hit animals on purpose. I've actually observed in my neighborhood people running over animals they don't like on purpose, swerving their trucks, say, to go over a rattlesnake. And that's particularly painful to me to see.
Now, in your novel, T, your main character, is a very successful real estate developer. He's made a lot of money young. I mean, he's still in his 20s. And then he finally falls in love, but his girlfriend dies in a tragic accident. And I mean, just as it seemed like he was getting his life together. And then he becomes obsessed with animals, with rare animals in particular. Am I right to read this as almost this becomes compensation for his personal loss?
You are right. And I think also he finds something to identify with in the condition of animals that are about to go extinct, because they're so isolated, and he feels extraordinarily isolated and alone.
It's almost like a conversion experience. I mean, he suddenly discovers the glories of nature, which makes me wonder if you've had any experience like this.
You know, I have in a way, although I can't say that my particular sort of epiphany happened in a moment, but I was just a very urban person growing. I grew up in a big city, and I always lived in big cities. And it was only when I came to the desert, well, it was really in 1990 originally, I came out to Arizona. And it was the first time I really knew nature at all. And I was overwhelmed by it. The sun sets out here, the sky is being so vast. I did find that I had to leave cities eventually in my life, that, you know, I lived in Toronto, I lived in LA, I lived in New York. I finally had to leave them because I didn't find anything sublime in day-to-day life in the city, because I just didn't get to see beyond people ever and the things that we have made. And I need to be away from the things that we've made really every day to be happy in my life. That was what I discovered when I came to the country after being a city girl for so long.
So you found solace in nature?
You know, I just found something that wasn't myself, that didn't remind me of myself. And actually, it's not that I mind myself particularly. It's just that I like to be reassured that there's a beautiful universe out there that has nothing to do with me and my people and the mistakes that we all make.
So it's not just getting outside yourself, it's getting outside of human beings, period.
Yeah, it is, it is.
Now, there's another piece of your story, and that's T becomes obsessed with zoos. He wants to be near wild and rare animals, and he starts breaking into zoos at night and going into the enclosures just to be near the animals. Are there people who actually do this, or was this strictly a fictional device?
Oh, you know, there actually are quite a few people who do this. They're sort of zoophiles, I suppose, who specifically break into zoos to be near the animals. It actually does exist as almost a subculture. I don't know, you know, what the numbers are, but people who work in zoos will tell you that this is a not infrequent occurrence, that someone has just wanted to be close to an animal. And it doesn't have to be a big charismatic animal. It could be a bird. It could be a lizard. You know, people really try to get into these enclosures with startling regularity. He went back that night when the zoo was closed, thrilled as if he was lightly drunk at the illicitness in himself. It was new. What arrested him in the zoo was the wildness it contained, how far this was from the realm of his competence. He wanted to meet it. He knew the zoo animals lived in cages, but nothing more about them except that they were alone, most of them, not only alone in the cages often, but alone on the earth, vanishing. Their condition was close to what he was trying to grasp, lay somehow at the base of his growing suspicion that the ground was no longer fixed, was shifting beneath him. Empire only looked good built against a backdrop of oceans and forests. It needed them. If the oceans were dead and the forests replaced by pavement, even empire would be robbed of its consequence. Alone, he thought, a word that came to him more and more, in sing-song, like a jeer. In the zoo, the rare animals might have been orphaned or captured or even born in captivity. He had no idea where they came from, could not know their individual histories, but he knew their position as he knew his own. They were at the forefront of aloneness, like pioneers. They were the ones sent ahead to see what the new world was like. Would they tell what they saw?
Do you see what's happening to the animal world right now as a kind of apocalypse, as more and more species go extinct every year?
I do. I do see it as apocalyptic. You know, species are, animals and plants are disappearing about 100 to 1,000 times faster every year than is sort of natural in recent history. And in about 70% of scientists, of biologists, refer to this time of ours as, you know, the sixth great extinction wave, the previous fifth wave having been 65 million years ago with the dinosaurs disappearing. So, yeah, I think in scientific terms, it simply is apocalyptic. Also, you know, the problem of global warming threatens to drive about a third of the creatures in the world extinct by the end of this century is the projection. So, and that's just global warming alone driving those extinctions. So, yeah, I think we're seeing something on an apocalyptic scale.
What do you hope your readers will take away from this book?
Oh, that's a complex question. I want them to have an experience of empathy for these creatures that are on the edge of oblivion and for the people who will be affected by the loss of these animals, you know, our children, their children. I think I want people to also feel that perhaps that they have a connection to this, that this is not something sort of just academic happening outside them or something that only has to do with politics and leadership. I mean, I think it has to do with everyone feeling the role that animals play in their lives, their language, their metaphor, their system of aesthetics. I mean, animals are a lot more to us than I think we consciously recognize in our daily lives. And so this book wants to touch that a bit.
I have to say, you have one of the most unusual acknowledgement pages that I've ever read in a novel. and I think this would be a great way to end this conversation. Your last paragraph, in a sense, it's the dedication of the book. It's the long list of rare animals that are disappearing.
And of course, this is just a tiny, tiny sampling of them. But I'd be happy to read it if you would like.
Yes, I would.
To the memory of the West African black rhinoceros, which disappeared from the world in the time it took to write this book, and in honor of the rarest species in the United States, any of which may vanish in the blink of an eye, the Alabama beach mouse, Alabama lamp mussel, Alabama sturgeon, Atwater's greater prairie chicken, Berkeley kangaroo rat, Buena Vista Lake ornate shrew, Cahaba pebble snail, Carolina elk toe, cat's paw, devil's hole pupfish, Florida panther, Florida salt marsh vole, Fosberg's lovegrass, Franciscan manzanita, giant Palouse earthworm, Guam Micronesian kingfisher, Hawaiian crow, Hawaiian monk seal, interrupted rock snail, Key Largo wood rat, Lang's metalmark butterfly, and Miami blue butterfly.
Lydia Millett's new novel, How the Dead Dream, was listed by the National Book Critics Circle as one of the 10 best of the year. Steve Paulson spoke with her.